Welcome, everyone, to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, April 19th, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. As usual, the meeting audio will be placed on our website. Just a few helpful tips. For people joining via phone calls, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star 9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon that will mute or unmute you or yourselves. If you go to the reactions, you can click on the hand icon to raise or lower your virtual hands. That helps us knowing that you would like to make a comment, and that also allows one speaker at a time. So thank you in advance for that. As you know, we do have interpreters on this call with us. Therefore, I would request everyone to please state your name first and then your comments. This helps them do their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who's the speaker. At this time, I would go ahead and read the agenda out loud, and I would also share my screen to show the agenda. So bear with me for just a quick moment and I would share my screen. Can everyone see my screen, those who can?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So for today's Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, agenda is as follows. We will go through the roll call of the committee members. After that, there will be a review of the agenda and meeting minutes from prior meeting. At 4:10, we will have customer service and outreach reports. 4:15, we will have Michael Wilson Award and Rush Award, if any. 4:20, we will have an update about Metro Access sedans, and Mr. Christian Blake will give us an update on that. Mr. Blake will also give us information. It's old business about Metro Access fleet seatbelts. That will happen at 4:35. At 4:50, Metro Access GPS solicitation. That will be an update by Tarian William Hall. At 4:55, Ms. Williams Hall will give us an update about safety and cleanliness. That's COVID related. At 5:10, we will have an update about Metro Access audio and video recording. Either Mr. Blake or Ms. Williams Hall will give us information on that. At 5:15, we have a committee discussion about Metro Access work plan, flat fare versus fare calculator. At 5:30, we will have public comment period and the meeting will adjourn at 6 p.m. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen. So bear with me for a quick moment. Okay, at this time, I would take roll call of the committee members. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson. Steve Caffin. Mary Kay McMahon. Philippa Mazzell, Anthony Oberg, Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray, Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaphore.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Semena. Okay, that concludes our roster for today's Metro Access meeting. At this point, Chair Semelford, I would ask you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you. Now that we did the call to order and roll call, and now we're going to review the agenda and minutes from the prior meeting. We just reviewed the agenda. It's fully packed. Are there any additions? Because this is a fully packed meeting. Topics, hearing the crickets, can I get a motion to move the agenda as is?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
All in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to move the agenda as presented. Next is the minutes from the prior meeting from last month in March. Are there any changes, corrections, additions? I'm open to all that now. Okay, hearing the crickets, can I get someone to move the minutes as is from March 2021?
So moved.
Second. Thank you. All those in favor to adopt the minutes from last month as is, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to move the minutes from March 2021 as is into the record. Next is customer service and outreach reports. Ms. Anderson and her team.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Allison Anderson with Metro Access. At this time, I'd like to present Ms. Kianda Washington with MTM to give the public resolution report from our last sessions.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Kianda. March, the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting, there were no outstanding public comments to be addressed. For the Metro Access Subcommittee public comment, there was a customer who reported that he had experienced being choked by the seatbelts on board. He did mention that he heard other customers complain about the same issues. The resolution for that was that the Department of Access Services has granted customers reasonable accommodations in an effort to avoid issues described by the customer. Metro Access Management is conducting a review of the location and angles of seatbelts in all models of the vans. AAC member Darnese Bush also stated that the option of a seatbelt waiver is available for any customer that is experiencing problems wearing seatbelts on the vehicles. There was also an AAC member that commended Mr. Blake for the presentation used during the March AAC meeting. The AAC member recommended that all future presenters be required to describe slides in detail for meeting attendees that are blind or have low vision. That person was thanked for their comments. Also, there were a total of 224 commendations for the month of March, with TransDev being at the top with 70, Diamond Transportation had 59, First Transit had 44, MV with 40, Challenger with 10, and Eligibility had 1. So thanks everybody for the great work.
And that concludes the public resolution report from the March timeframe. I believe Mr. Semelford, you're still on mute.
Oh, sorry. Is there outreach report?
We don't have any specific outreach to alert the committee to. We still continue to, as we get customer reports either through our office or ADAP, continue to address those individually.
Thank you. So next is the Michael Wilson Award and Rush Award. And I presume from Ms. Rush, there will not be a Rush Award recipient until at some point in the future it is safe to do so. We meet in person, if I'm correct. And then I was going to ask, is there a Michael Wilson Award recipient for this month?
There is. So at this time, I'd like to present Mr. Robbie Worth with Diamond Transportational National Express to recognize our Michael Wilson Award recipient.
Thank you very much, Allison. I'd like to find out if our recipient, Mr. David Smith, is on the call. David, are you there? You are. How you doing? You got your mask on and practicing safety. Thank you. Well, it's an honor to recognize Mr. David Smith as the Michael Wilson Award recipient for the month of April. David began his employment with National Express on May 8th of 2017. Mr. Smith completed over 5,000 trips since his tenure with an on-time performance rate of 95%. Mr. Smith has an excellent attendance record and has made a habit of reporting to work early to contribute to the afternoon routes being pulled out on time. He has received over 200 commendations in relation to his professional and helpful demeanor since 2019. That's the record for National Express Maryland for the most commendations received. We were very pleased to receive an email at the beginning of March from a consumer representative from the Office of Customer Relations at WMATA, which stated the following. Over the last few years, I have always received commendations for Max driver, Mr. David Smith. His service is amazing, and all of his patrons are so satisfied when they ride with him. If there is an avenue for Max drivers to be recognized other than the normal way we submit commendations, please let me know and I will follow up with it. Mr. Smith receives at least one commendation per week, if not more. He is an exceptional employee, end quote. It is an honor to receive amazing feedback from someone outside of our organization that also recognizes his hard work, dedication, and commitment to every single passenger he transports. David tries his hardest to be polite, friendly, and safe with every passenger he encounters. He often reminds his fellow operators to treat all passengers like they are your grandparent or you'll never have a bad experience. You'll never encounter Mr. Smith without a smile on his face. He takes great pride in his appearance, professional demeanor, and work ethics, something he was taught while growing up in North Carolina with his grandparents. He constantly tries to be better than he was the day before. Aside from working at MetroAxis, he owns and operates a lawn care service in Prince George's County. He takes great pride in his son's Joshua's achievements as well. His only son was selected as valedictorian in his graduating class of 2020 and has gone on to study at North Carolina A&T, located in Greensboro, North Carolina. His son recently accepted an internship at DTR Construction for construction management. Mr. Smith enjoys talking and bragging about his family and their achievements. In return, his family shows their appreciation to David by celebrating all of his achievements, milestones as well. We have recently invited Mr. Smith to speak with all new hires during their first week in training to provide additional customer service pointers and tips, as well as sharing a few heart-touching stories. Mr. Smith loves his career at National Express, his coworkers and management team, and of course, his passengers. We look forward to watching Mr. Smith continue to grow as an operator and see what the future holds for him here at National Express. Thank you, David. And David, I will turn the floor over to you if you have a few comments you'd like to say.
Thank you all for this award. It's kind of touching right now. I didn't expect this. I pride myself on trying to be the best at whatever I do. Forgive me if I feel a little choked up right now. This caught me off guard. I had no idea why I was being called in, but to receive an award like such as this prestige to me, it means a lot. I do my best every day, and I make sure that the people that I'm surrounded by, I try my best to make them happy. I love you all, and I love my job. And thank you. Thank you very much for showing so much concern and consideration for me. Paul, I never knew who you was, Paula, other than a great person that get on my bus all the time. And to see you as a VIP. And you never carried yourself as a VIP. You always treated me as if I was a complete stranger. But seeing you here involved in this, Paul, means a lot. Thank you all for giving me this award. And I promise to do my best to continue making this company a success. I love you all, and I appreciate the time you've given me. And I look forward to the continued success with the company. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for the awesome job you do every day, every night, every evening, the shifts that you do. We sincerely appreciate for keeping our customers safe and comfortable as during their public transportation experience. So, well, that note, next, we have Mr. Blake up next. Mr. Blake in the house. Yes.
This is Anu.
Yeah.
We had a hand up. I think the person just pulled their hand down.
Oh,
the hand is up. Bong.
Oh, Bong. Go ahead. Does it relate to the recipient? Did you want to say anything to the recipient here? Or? Oh, we can't hear you. You're on mute.
Sorry about that. It does. So I work for the Department of Transportation for the state of Maryland. Department of Disabilities for the state of Maryland. And I just want to let you know, I've never met you personally. And actually, I live in Baltimore. But just to hear all of the accolades that you have received for being who you are, I want you to know as a rider, because I am a rider of paratransit, I want you to know as a rider, that's very hard to come by. So whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Oh, is Mr. Blake in the house?
Yes, yes.
I am here.
Okay, so you're up first with the sedan. So I'm going to start off with a few comments, and then I'm going to let you respond and take it over from there. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
So the reason I brought this topic back is, well, we began to see lots of sedans back on, you know, into service now, because I believe last time you told me there was going to be a total of 175. So we wanted to find out, you know, what's the total number that's in service. That's one. Two, I remember when we had a discussion at the AAC, you specifically said we had the option and even questioned it whether or not we can sit in the front seat. And then when the sedans came out a couple weeks ago, I requested to sit in the front seat and found out something different. I wish I'd known earlier that there was a switch and change in that decision-making and communicated to us. And I understand why, clearly, because of the closeness next, the proximity next to the driver, but I was told otherwise by somebody here. the next point is with the sedans moving forward, if we are, you know, since we are sitting in the back, we would hopefully have the expectation that the side where the seat that's not being used in front of us, that the driver does, if you can communicate that to the wonderful providers that see on here, that the driver automatically make sure that seat is pushed all the way forward and the back of that seat is all the way forward for a passenger comfort who sits on that side. I shouldn't have to get into a vehicle and have to request that, since that seat was automatically not going to be used anyway. We would sincerely appreciate that as customers. Also to remind the driver, if there's a second person, you know, going to be boarding, because there's obviously only a capacity of two, that he also adjusts his seat so there's room for the customer behind him. And with that, I'm going to let you go ahead, Mr. Blake.
Okay, no problem. So I'm going to address each of your points, but let me back up as to part of this discussion. And I thought it was brought up not because of your recent experience, but because last month there was, I won't say a debate, but a discussion between myself and a member of the public who was suggesting that the sedans that we have, the Toyota Camrys that we have, are somewhat different than the Toyota Camrys that, let's say, the taxi cab providers have and the Uber drivers have, that I pointed out that some members of the committee as well as some members of the public had actually ridden in. So we did a quick research and a little study about it. And we do have approximately 60 Toyota Camry sedans in the fleet now. We're getting about 5 per week. And by the end of this fiscal year, again, we will have 175. And our fleet manager, Mr. Jim Hancock, did go out and do the measurements, although again, Carol Lopez had already done them, but we verified that the 2020 sedans, Toyota Camry sedans, and the 2021 Toyota Camry sedans have the exact same headroom and legroom. So, and they match the headroom and legroom of the 19 models as well. So again, maybe they're not the exact same as perhaps, let's say, a 2012 Toyota Camry. I mean, there could be some changes, but by and large, these Camry sedans are the same that many customers have ridden in through our alternative programs prior to Metro Access having access to these vehicles. So that was the first work that we did following last month's meeting. Now, to your questions specifically, I'll go from the back. In terms of moving the seats up, since no one would be in the front seat, I think that's reasonable. I want to clarify, because I thought we informed the AEC, but so much is going on, I'll say maybe we didn't. But right now, no. During a declared emergency, there will be no available seating in the front seat. During a declared emergency, particularly involving an airborne virus. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. So that takes care of the front seat in general.
Okay.
Number two, one of the things we're clarifying, because, and that's why I say maybe I did not inform the AAC, because we just clarified with the OCC in terms of scheduling. Right now, and this began, well, I thought it was going on already, but I was corrected that I was not very clear in my communication, so I take the responsibility for that. But there will not be anyone traveling in a sedan who's not traveling alone. Okay, So there will not be another passenger behind the driver.
Oh, okay, so this is new news for me, okay.
Yeah, so we wanna just clarify that there will be transportation for customers traveling alone until the pandemic is declared over.
So in other words, you're stating for the record, anyone who ride in a sedan, it's only one individual, and that's behind
the
front
registered
seat.
The registered Metro Access passenger, yes.
Okay, so no PCA. Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
That is correct. And then you had another question. You talked about the seats moving forward. You talked about the passenger behind you. Was there one more you added in there?
No. Obviously, it's a moot point with the passenger behind the driver and what you just said. So now the seat that I would have to take, it would be nice. The expectation is that the driver automatically, and some of them have already done it, but some I had to tell them, can you – you see, I'm a big person. Push it forward. Push that forward, head forward. That would be nice. So that I have.
We'll get that message out. And once it's moved up once, it shouldn't have to be moved anymore. So I think that's an easy and reasonable request.
Okay.
All right. I do see a question. Let's finish this and not mix it up with the next subject, because I was putting them all together. But I see a question from a member of the committee.
Okay, who is the member of the committee anew or Mr. Blake that would like to ask the question as it relates to this topic?
Okay, news on mute, so I'll just say Ms. Henry. I see
Ms. Mr. Blake.
Ms. Bush, yes.
Yes. My question is, and you kind of answered it a little bit maybe, but how far does the door in the back open for the person to get in? Because that was one of the problems.
Yes.
Before with the sedan, that it didn't open all the way.
Right. The door opening angle for a Toyota Camry is listed as 39 inches.
Well, I don't know.
More than enough room for you.
Also, Mr. Blake, just
but her hand is still up. Did I answer your question, Ms. Bush? And do you have any other questions?
Do you have any other questions, Ms. Bush? before I ask one or ask any other committee members ask a question as it relates to this topic?
Maybe she put her phone on me. We'll come back to her.
So the other thing I noticed with the sedans and riding them on, you know, numerous trips is that I guess it's a matter of protocol now with the drivers. They put the child safety locks on. So at the end of the trip, even though, yeah, someone like me can independently can get out of the vehicle, they would like to do it themselves for obviously safety reasons to escort the passenger out of the vehicle, out of that door. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes, and we're having actually discussions about that because on one hand, it does make sense for the exact reasons you said, but on the other hand, that is the emergency exit for a passenger.
Oh,
and we would not want a passenger locked in there in case something happens. So we're actually, and when I say we, Metro Access Management, myself, Ms. Williams Hall, and Terry Prevo, who's our safety guru, if you want to, for the lack of a better word, although safety is all of our jobs, we're really having an internal discussion, as well as the fleet manager, Mr. Hancock. We're having an internal discussion on the whole child safety lock piece right now.
Because I know with abilities ride, I'm used to just getting out of the vehicle, cab or what have you, or Uber, and just go like any normal person. But I'm like, oh, the child safety lock's on. And I noticed that, oh, they have to, you know, finish whatever the paperwork is, go put the cone out, and then let me out.
And we respect your dignity, and we respect the dignity of the customers. So we're not certainly not saying because you happen to have a disability, you're a child or something. We're certainly not doing that. It's a balance. What is more safer, keeping the door locked where a customer has access to it, or keeping the door unlocked in the event of that one particular emergency that can occur? And we're really having a debate on that right now. And when we finalize our internal discussions, we're going to let the public and let you as the AAC know which way we're going with this and why we've made the decision we made.
Okay, any other questions from any committee members as it relates to sedans and the update you just gave and the questions I asked?
Here, Summer Ford, Ms. Rush has her hand up.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
The safety lock for emergencies, in your discussion, I hope that you consider that, especially for blind people, we're in the back seat, and the driver might have an emergency, and we need to get out of the car, and we can't because we don't know I don't know where he put on that safety lock. You all shouldn't do that with visually impaired people or handicapped people in general, because anything could happen. I mean, we could be at the light and get hit from the back. We just need to get out the car, and we can't.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
I hope you consider that, please.
Oh, believe me, and I'll confess, I was the one who felt it was the safety that we keep the locks on. And I've been being educated, although I'm not the only one with that opinion. We're now, in terms of my opinion of that, my initial thoughts of it is now in the minority. So I think, I just don't want to jump ahead of us, our final decision, because a lot is being considered here. But I believe the point you just made is definitely one of the key points that has been brought to my attention and has educated me in terms of re-evaluating what I thought was in quote unquote obvious safety approach, but I've been educated on this. So yes, your point is very well taken, and it's one that's been brought to my attention by my team members.
And you know, I need oxygen when you said that the door is 39 inches open. We want it 90. You squeezed us into 45, and now we're at 39. What, you putting us on a diet? I'm not laughing.
I'm laughing to keep from crying.
I need oxygen.
But now, when You look so pretty. I mean, I wish I could share those pictures of you. You look so pretty getting in the vehicle. I didn't think
I can't see how I look. And really, I have lost weight because you put me on a diet. I got to squeeze. Squeezing me in the car, and now you're going to lock me in. I got to squeeze out. Give me a break.
Yes, ma'am. I'm listening loud and clear, and we're listening, Ms. Rasha. We're really listening, and I hear you. That's all I can say. I don't want to jump ahead of what else is happening, but as you do know, there will be another solicitation for some additional sedans, and let's see how that plays out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. If there's no other questions on this topic,
Well, I see Mr. Chairman Posner. Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, just to clear up the problem of communication, Mr. Blake was talking about the inches from the frame to the outside of the door rather than the angle at which the door opens. So, Ms. Rush, the 90 that you're talking about is the angle at which the door opens, as opposed to the 45 degree angle that currently occurs. We're not the distance, so you can go off your diet now and still get in. I'd also like to add in that one of the problems with the children's locks that have occurred in the future is that EMT people can't open the door from the outside when that lock is on. So if the driver has a heart attack or you have a heart attack in the back seat, they can't get at you to help you. So another reason, as long as the person in the rear is wearing the shoulder harness, you're not likely to fall out. And for accessory EMT and things like that, the lock being off is an advantage.
Well, again, I don't want to jump ahead of our final, but I think Ms. Williams Hall, based on what we've been saying internally and how you all have educated me, and you heard from Ms. Rush and you heard from the chair, I think we know where our decision is going to be. But we'll come back with an official statement following our final discussion on this particular subject.
I'm just saying, for the many years I've written, when we did have sedans in service, this only occurred when, I guess, they put the child locks on for certain populations of clients where there was, you know, a safety component obvious issue where they needed to put it on for. But beyond that, I did not experience that when we did have sedans in the fleet previously.
Gotcha. Thank you.
But okay, if there's not anyone else, we're going to move to the next topic.
There's more.
Oh, okay.
We have a member.
Oh, it's not over with. Oh, okay.
No. Who's next? We have a member of the public, Ansel Torres.
Ansel Torres, how are you doing? And hopefully, please make sure this relates to this topic, because I'm sure you have something to say. Go ahead.
I'm just hoping in all of this, I will be able to maintain my dignity, because it seems as though we're on a slippery slope here to losing it all. And just be very, very careful about that stuff, because I think when someone signs up to become a Metro Access user, I believe there is a threshold that is set for or there's a requirement of the individual being able to do certain things or be capable of doing certain things. There's a certain level of care, self-care, that the disabled person needs to be capable of. And I think that is something. If you have someone who, for mental reasons, who may be unable to make proper judgments about opening the door, I think that needs to be dealt with in that situation. I don't think all of us in the disabled community should be put under that broad brush of that level of safety. Thanks.
Thank you for bringing that point, because that's what I was alluding to.
Yes, indeed. Okay. We've heard you all loud and clear, and we'll be back in touch with you about this policy.
Okay.
Have one more member, Deborah Fisher.
All right, Deborah Fisher, you're the last person, and then we're going to move on to the next pocket topic to stay on task with this agenda. Thank you.
I promise to make it quick. I just want to comment on Mr. Torres's comment. The population of that he's referencing, those with intellectual or developmental disabilities, we actually, in our own service model, cannot lock a person into a vehicle unless we establish through a professional the need to do so, because it is considered a violation of their rights. So we would not do it in any provider vehicle or personal vehicle that they would be transported in. So Mr. Blake, you might want to keep that in mind.
Thank you. That, and given who you're representing on this committee, again, between yourself, Ms. Rush, Chairman Posner, Subcommittee Chair Semelford, and Ansel Torres. I mean, if this was the Supreme Court, it'd be very bipartisan if by now. I mean, so we're hearing you. We're hearing you loud and clear.
All right, thank you for this topic. I'm sure it will come up again. Next will be about the seatbelt, Mr. Blake.
Right, so this was the other old business in terms of following up from last month's meeting, and our MTM representative alluded to it, and this is the work we've done. So yes, the first generation of the Ford Transit vehicle has a bench seat in the left rear, fold-up single seat in the left front, a right side that contains two single seats, and the right side seats have seat belts mounted 2 inches lower than the back seat. So depending on which seat a customer is in, again, this is brought up by one particular customer, but again, he is not the only one who's raised this topic. And while there is a waiver of the seat belts, waiving your right to wear a seatbelt, or in this case, a requirement to wear a seatbelt on our service, is not something we encourage. We're not gonna stop you. You insist on saying, I don't wanna wear a seatbelt, we're gonna respect your rights and you'll sign a waiver, but that's not something we're encouraging. But we do notice a 2-inch difference in like baseball, a game of inches, those 2 inches could really make a difference depending on your size and body shape, et cetera. So we recognize that. Now, most of these vehicles will be retired by the end of fiscal year 22, which means by June 30th of 2022, these vehicles, all of these Ford Transits, let me put it this way, should be out of the system by then. We'll see how things play out. But in the meantime, yes, customers have a couple of choices. One, submit information to myself and to Carol Lopez, and we'll grant you a reasonable accommodation, which is what we would prefer. Or we can, reasonable accommodation. Or two, you can request a waiver of the seatbelts when you're riding in a certain vehicle. But again, that is not something we encourage. We have to offer it, but it's definitely not something we encourage. So to the point of the customer who raised that, while we're not saying it absolutely creates choking, because everybody is different, every individual height, weight, shape creates different scenarios with these seatbelts, but clearly it wasn't an unreasonable or illogical point that was brought forward. And again, these vehicles, the vast majority of them will be out of our network by June of 2022.
So, Mr. Blake, I have a question, and probably because maybe it's because of COVID, from what I'm hearing, the request for waivers, as I remembered in the past, it was a form that you would get from eligibility office, because they would process it, where you get the physician to sign, fill out and complete their portion to return to the eligibility office to make the determination. Is it correct, because of COVID and I guess the difficulty of getting certain things accessed, y'all have reworked that specific policy? Because that what I'm hearing right now is the process is different than
We're not asking for a
document. I just wanted to ask that for the record. That's all.
You just contact us, and if it's a waiver, it won't be an official reasonable accommodation, but we're going to treat it with the same level of sensitivity and understanding. If your reason for the waiver is because the difficulties you're experiencing being strapped in the seatbelt while using our service.
All right. And I see Antoine got on the call here when I mentioned it. That's why I wanted to, for the record, it sounds like you are tweaking the policy because of the COVID going on and the availability of people being able to get to a doctor, fill out the waiver, and get it back to eligibility is probably a little bit more challenging. So this is the way you're trying to ease up that process for right now.
Antoine says yes, but actually, yes, but let me amend.
Yeah, but that's my interpretation, because I know there's a right. policy in place, and then you said something different. That's right. why I want to be clear for
the only record. Because, again, based on the feedback of one customer as well as some others, this is not a situation where a doctor needs to tell. This is the customer's experience on the service. So this isn't so much about their disability. It's about the shape of the vehicle and, or in this case, the placement of the seatbelt that could create a choking or other discomfort. So that has more to do with the fact of the customer reporting of their travel experience, less so than their disability.
Oh, okay. But if it's their disability, does it still follow?
That's the doctor. Yeah, we're not waiving that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's still going to go through eligibility. To the choking.
That is correct. This is in relation to a customer reporting that he or she, because again, choking from a seatbelt can occur to a person who doesn't have a disability.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this has nothing to do with their disability. This has to do with us making sure that exercising one's civil right to use Metro Access doesn't result in excruciating pain and discomfort.
Okay. I just wanted to make that distinction. That's all.
I got you. But let me just add, other than perhaps squeezing in the back of the Toyota Camry.
Did you want to have something to add, Antoine?
No, he hit it on the money. That's
okay. I just wanted to be clear, because I know one procedure and process. I just want to be clear to the customers, because they're going to think it's all the same thing. That's why I wanted to make sure it's clear on both ends.
And I'm with you. And the easiest thing, I always have them call my office. That's the best thing.
And are there any questions from customers on this specific topic? Or
Chair Summerford, we have two hands up. First is by Dr. Posner. The next one is Ms. Bush.
Okay, Dr. Posner, and then Ms. Bush, you follow.
Yeah, I will just remind everybody that for people 6'3" and under, a seatbelt extender really cures the problem. The problem we have had on occasion is there is not a seatbelt extender on the van. And so I would like to make sure that you know that everyone has a seatbelt extender when they leave. Once we go back to normal service and there's more than one person per vehicle, I would suggest that we have 2 to 3 seatbelt extenders on each van. Because often the wheelchair people require a seatbelt extender, and if we have 2 wheelchairs and we get a tall person, it would be good to have 3 so that all 3 of them are not being choked. And that's a small service for people 6'2" and under. Taller than 6'2", there's not much you can do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Bush?
My statement is, for short people, I'm not 6'2". I'm closer to 5'2". But the seatbelt waiver is because the seatbelt actually moves up and chokes, has a tendency to choke shorter people. But I have a shoulder harness waiver, and I'm still seatbelted across my, waistline. So is there a difference? And if it is, you should publicize it, because with the shoulder waiver, I'm more satisfied, but I am still secure because I have the lap belt across my waist secure.
It is my understanding, if you have a waiver through the eligibility office, it should have been, as noted, and if it's approved by the eligibility office, the driver should see it in the notes as part of your trip details. Is that correct, Mr. Blake or Antoine?
I believe that's correct, but I will allow Antoine to clarify.
That's correct. Have the doctor fill out the paperwork, and once it's approved, we update your profile, and the driver should be able to see that you can use the seatbelt.
Well, I actually do have, I submitted a waiver, but what I'm trying to find out, is there a between a seatbelt waiver and a shoulder waiver?
I'll let Antoine answer.
Is it one and the same?
So go ahead, Antoine. When you fill out the form for the waiver, the doctor is going to clarify what you need it for.
I had mine filled out for the shoulder.
Yeah, so we have an extension if you need it, or if the harness is bothering you, then you can get that waiver signed, and then we'll update it in your profile.
Okay. Still making sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other person that has a comment or questions that relates to this topic?
So I do not see any other AAC members, but we do have a member of the public, Ansel Torres.
Go ahead, Mr. Torres.
Two things. The issue with the extender, I don't believe that whether you're 6'4" or 6 feet or 5 feet or whatever, putting on the extender doesn't solve the problem, because all that happens is that the seatbelt adjusts with or without the extender. It's just the way it's designed, it keeps tightening until it gets to resistance. And then actually, as you move around, the more you move around, like a hangman's noose, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. So my experience, I'm not sure which seatbelt Mr. Posner is talking about, maybe the one he experienced, that's the case, but definitely not with the seatbelt that I have had to use on the buses in question. The other thing I am observing is that this issue is being talked about as though it has something to do with the size of the person. It always seems to be sort of, it's something about me or the customer or the rider that is the problem. And let me speak about my situation specifically. It's not me. It's the procurement of a vehicle that essentially has a defective product, because seatbelts are not supposed to keep tightening the more you move. The seatbelts that I know of that I use, and when they work properly, the time that they tighten, they tighten is when there is a jerking movement with the vehicle. It's just like a kind of sort of like an airbag, where it detects the sharp motion and it grabs you. But when you're just sitting there driving smoothly, no issue, it is kept a little loose, and it allows you to move forward and backward. Not all of them do, but there's no seatbelt that I have ever used in any other vehicle other than a Metro Access vehicle that simply continues to tighten the more you move. I mean, that's a Metro Access phenomenon. I dare anyone to find another vehicle where that happens. And I'm just a little sensitive about issues in procurement, because I think procurement here is the enemy. I believe that we need to place the problem where it started, because if a proper vehicle with a proper seatbelt was procured, we wouldn't be having this conversation at all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Get to the girls, because
I mean, procurement only purchases what a department asks them to purchase. I've experienced seatbelts where, when I move, they secure me. But we're not saying the customer is the problem. We're saying that, as we said with the sedans, there's no one vehicle that's perfect for 100% of the customers, but we're in the accommodation business and we're trying to accommodate individuals. If 100% of the customers were saying they were choked by seatbelts, I think that would be a matter to deal with in a broad brush sort of way. When that is not the case, then I think we need to deal with it from an accommodation standpoint. And from my experience with this subject, from hearing from customers on the matter, I've seen body shape, size as the challenge. Not the customer, but it's just the challenge. And we're trying to accommodate customers. When we get the new vehicles, we'll see. I know you've been in the sedans, not for discussion now, but you can certainly let us know if the sedans have the same seatbelt phenomena that you're experience with the vans. And again, we'll continue to work with any customer who experiences challenges using the seatbelts on any of our vehicles and accommodate their needs as they travel. I see Ms. Rush has her hand up as well.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Yes. Riding the vans and the extension does tighten, but when I get the extension, I hold it in my hand so that it will not tighten. But it does tighten. I don't know why, but it does. And to keep it from choking me, I hold it so it can't move back and forth. I have a waiver. So it says on my one side that I can't have the seat belt. So now I need to get another waiver for the entire and just have it around my waist. I'm just asking a question.
Well, if you have a waiver, I think you can work with it. But I'll talk to Antoine about your particular case and make sure we're talking about the same thing in terms of this waist versus a waiver in general. Someone from the eligibility office will get back in touch with you after this discussion so that we can make sure we're all talking about the same thing in terms of waste versus.
Because your answer to Ms. Bush, it's really not clear, because a waiver, you could have, mine says one side, you cannot put a seatbelt at all, but that's a waiver for one side. So if both of them will choke me, then I have to get a waiver to not have the seatbelt around any shoulder and just around my waist. It's the wording.
Right. So one is the seatbelt, so the one that goes around your waist. And then there's also a lap belt that goes across your chest, right?
Right. And I cannot have that on one side. On my right side, I cannot have it. But now that the extensions, when you put them, they do choke you. So now do I need another waiver saying I just can only have a seatbelt around my waist?
Okay, well, let Mr. Blake look at it. We'll figure it out and get back to you. It shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Excuse me. We do have two more hands up, Dr. Posner, and then another member of the public bank.
All right. And so that will be the last two people that I will take, because we do need to move on with this agenda or adjust it. Thank you.
I'll be quick. Mr. Torres is correct. The seatbelts are designed to prevent you from flying. When there's a sudden push on the seatbelt, it returns to its set position. When you click it in, that's the position it will stay in. If you push it forward, it will come back to the initial position that it was in. If it gets too short for you, the simple fix for that, and it's very simple, disconnect it. Let it go back all the way and then start over and rehook it. On the vans, because of the shock absorbers and the bounce and the ride, what happens is it does tend to tighten as you go. And so if it overly tightens because it's doing the job it's supposed to do, the answer to that is disconnect it, let it go all the way back to rest, and then extend it out as far as you wanted to go and then plug it in and click it in place and you're back to start. You may have to do that several times during a trip. You know, we all know what the shock absorbers are like. And, you know, I have had to do it several times during a trip. But they're doing what they're designed to do. They are not defective. The shock absorbers are. Thank you.
I strongly disagree with that, sir. I absolutely strongly disagree with that because just the shock absorbers have nothing to do with this problem at all. Because, and even, let's assume you're right. Let's assume you're right. How are we going to have a vehicle with a seatbelt where you have to take it off in the middle of your trip? The time that you, because that's what I've done that as well. And when I take it off, essentially, God forbid if there's an accident at that point, I'm left with a seatbelt in my hand. I shouldn't have to do that. I want to wear the seatbelts, especially on those vehicles where there's nothing in front of you. If the van stops suddenly, you go flying forward if you don't have a seatbelt. So I want to be able to wear both my lap belt and my shoulder belt. I don't want to dodge them because I've been in an accident before and I know how important they are. So, but I shouldn't have to be taken off my seatbelt to adjust it constantly. And I've ridden in all kinds of vehicles and had to wear seatbelts. And, you know, the shock absorbers had nothing to do with it. It's right. Just a defective product. And we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bong, you're the last person on this topic. Then we need to move on.
Sure. And thank you. And I'll try to be as brief as possible. So I have a question because I'm a little bit confused. We're talking about seatbelts and vans versus sedans. Are we talking about Q-strain belts in both of these vehicles?
We're talking about the regular seatbelts installed in our Metro Access vans.
Okay. So we're not necessarily talking about Q-strain belts. For wheelchair passengers and then
no. This is if you're in a seat, the rear seats.
Okay.
Those seats I described. You're in a regular seat. So you've been on a Metro Access van, correct? Because we talked about
not a Metro Access. No, unfortunately I have not, but thanks to you, I will soon.
Okay. Gee, more ridership. This would be
right.
Okay. But no. Okay. So, but when you get in the van, if you get in a van or if you're on alternative, this is if you're riding in a Metro Access van. And again, I'm talking about body shape, height, weight, et cetera. Customer saying has nothing to do with that. And that's fair. But the point is when you get in, the driver secures you with the seatbelt. Seatbelt secures you. It's tight. For some customers, it's tight right across their throat or neck area, which then creates a choking sensation or feeling or experience. For others, it's tight, but it goes straight across their chest and there's not the choking experience. So why some customers are choked and others are not, if you will, or have that experience, I've always said, again, it's because of shape, height, weight, etc. But whatever reason it is, for those customers who say they experience that sensation and discomfort when riding, we're creating options for them that include a safety first option and one that allows for a waiver, but something we don't necessarily encourage.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
And I'm sorry. And I agree with you, Christian. And actually I agree with the person who was just speaking and then also with Mr. Torres as well. But, you know, they both have valid points and the tightening of the belts, regardless if it's in a regular car or in a Metro Access or in a mobility, you know, I agree with Dr. Posner, you know, those belts are designed to click and stay. However, with the movement, you know, of a bus, with the shock absorbers or even a car, your movement, you know, it tends to get tighter. I agree also with Mr. Torres because some people can't unbuckle their seatbelt. For example, myself, I'm physically disabled and I'm in a wheelchair. However, I have found a way that if a shoulder strap tightens for me to just lean my shoulder back a little bit and then pull forward really fast, you know, to loosen it up. So, I mean, everyone has valid points, but I was just curious on what type of belts we were actually talking about. Were they standard sedan seat belts, which came with the shoulder and lap belt, or were they Q-string seat belt, shoulder and lap belts? So thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Williams-Hall, with your update on the GPS solicitation.
Okay.
And then followed by your next presentation.
All right, safety and cleanliness after GPS. Good afternoon, everyone. As you guys may recall, we recently solicited for a new real-time traffic application. To that solicitation, only one company responded. Unfortunately, that company's capabilities were hampered by our legacy scheduling and dispatch software. So as a result, we've initiated efforts to test devices and solutions that will not require integration with our software. Right now, we're planning a pilot over the next few months to test the use of tablets and off-the-shelf commercial GPS software in 10 vehicles. We'll test efficacy, ease of use, and any potential safety or service impacts. We hope to provide feedback on initial efforts in late June. So with that, I'll take any questions.
So with that, my question is, are y'all looking for customers, or is this more a driver end thing that's testing it and giving you feedback?
It's more for the drivers to provide feedback, yes. But naturally, if a customer has a concern, they're certainly invited to share that with us.
Okay. Any other questions as it relates to this topic?
Well, yes. I have a question.
All right.
It's semi-related, but every time we try to do something to make things better, we're trapped with trapeze. Isn't it time for us to look for something better than trapeze?
So in response to that, you may recall, Dr. Posner, that we are currently working on a solicitation for new scheduling and dispatch software. I do believe that Mr. Blake can provide probably a more accurate update. The next steps are just waiting on board budget approval, because we're ready to go.
Let me jump back though again.
Thank you, sir.
And I hear you, Dr. Posner, and I've heard this from a member of the public and others. But say again, let's just step back for a second, because again, we have to. And you, as members of the public and even a committee, can say whatever you want. You know, I never stop you from saying what you want to say and everything. But that comment, yours, Dr. Posner, what we've heard from a member of the public prior, and I've always had to come back and say, hey, we're open, fair competition, et cetera. But this is why procurement wants me to kind of put a wall between us and some of the things we do, because those type of comments are very prejudicial. And even if we, quote unquote, select a different vendor, it creates these type of situations. So all I would say, Dr. Posner, is companies are competitive. They are good at what they do. We've had some experiences, and I won't detail my opinion or anything like that, because again, I don't want to be prejudicial. I will say this though, as Ms. Williams-Hall stated, we are engaged in a new solicitation. And one can read into that whatever they want. And you know, why would you? You get it. You know, I won't divorce my wife if I love her, if you get my trip. My point is, though, these are all open, fair competition. And one of the things we are doing and trying to do is not tie all of our business operations to one particular company. And one of the things, if you recall, Dr. Posner, a few weeks ago, I think it was at the last meeting, you said, hey, how come we just can't go out and get some GPS off the shelf? And I said, well, that was one of my first ideas. And one of the things Ms. Williams-Hall clarified was the need for these things to connect to that system. Well, we listened to you. We went back and looked at it and say, you know what? We're not going to be bound by that system for this particular effort. So we listened to you. And that is what Ms. Williams-Hall is reporting. I would just, again, AAC and members of the public, obviously, free country, First Amendment, you can say whatever you want. But, you know, a former attorney general had to say to a president, let us do our job. You're not helping us sometimes. I totally get what you're saying, believe me. But remember, this is very public. You're in an official committee of Metro, although you don't have any procurement powers or anything like that. I would just say, we hear you. We're having a solicitation. The incumbent company could be awarded. That's definitely a possibility, but we're certainly looking for whoever is awarded to come in with a whole new approach, a whole new attitude, if you will, in terms of what their software, dispatch and scheduling software, can do for us and on behalf of our customers.
Thank you. I'll apologize and clarify my statement. I know that when any contract goes out, one of the things that procurement of every company from the federal government down to WMATA does is look at the record of each company to see whether they can do the job that is being requested. And then everyone is weighed equally as to who can do what the requests are and who can do it the best and who has a track record. It's not just what you say you can do, it's what you have demonstrated that you can do. And right. So the comment was, we have had several things that we've been unable to implement because they didn't interface. And so my comment is not get rid of, my comment is find a way to interface with the system that we have. And if they can adapt to that, as they did with the fare calculator, that's fine. If not, I think we need to look for someone that is the most flexible. So I apologize if I was misinterpreted or I misspoke.
Thank you for that clarification and that statement. Your second half will definitely be bold and underlined in the minutes so that nobody can use this meeting against us. But as you may recall, I went on what essentially was a political campaign going around the whole region, especially to groups representing people who are blind and low vision about the pre-arrival calls. And Paul Semaford has been very patient. He sent me another email 1:30 in the morning a couple of nights ago. And I didn't respond, Paul, but I did read it right as soon as you sent it. But you can only imagine how much how I felt once after promising customers a whole new world, and you remember this was a couple of years ago, and not being able to deliver because I was relying on a certain contractor. It was extremely, extremely disappointing. And so again, I hear you and I appreciate your clarification. It helps all of us.
All right, thank you so much. Is there another comment? Because it's at 5:08 right now. We end at 6 and have public comment period. And we have about 3 more topics. Miss Williams Halls, you ready for your next topic on safety?
I think I see 2 hands, yes. Mr. Chairman.
Oh, there's 2 other hands. Okay. Who are they?
Deborah Fisher and then the member of the public.
All right. I will take Deborah Fisher and the member of the public. Then I must move on because some things are going to have to move until next month.
Okay.
Thank you. Quick question. Will this GPS have the capability of being monitored by the rider or a family member or provider in real time?
Oh, yes. We've asked those questions so long, but I'm going to let Ms. Williams-Halls answer that question.
Sure. So what we're looking to pilot is truly just off-the-shelf commercial-grade GPS services, much like what you would get on your cell phone through Waze or Google Maps, one of those kinds of applications on a tablet. What you're describing is much more like trip monitoring, like you would get on an Uber application. And those are features that we're looking to include in that solicitation that Mr. Blake just mentioned for our scheduling and dispatch software. So that would not be a part of this pilot that's upcoming in June.
Okay.
Thank you. And the member of the public, please be brief. I do need to move to the next subject.
Yeah, this is Ansel Torres, and I just want to comment about the trapeze issue. Let me state categorically that I don't care if it is trapeze or rice and peas or whatever the company is called that provides Metro Access and by extension, yours truly, with a functioning, working GPS system. So, because trapeze really means nothing to me. Absolutely nothing, except that it appears to not work in my favor. If it was working in my favor, I would be singing its praises as often as I possibly can. So the company has nothing, it's all about performance at the end of the day. And that's what we should be looking at. Somehow New York City has gotten their system to work. Maybe they're using trapeze, I don't know. But they're making it work. And they've been doing, you know, providing GPS apps for their patrons for a long time now.
Yes, I
and
do agree.
I don't understand how we, I mean, you know, a former executive of Microsoft did a presentation a long time ago, and he said, you know, basically our strategy at Microsoft is very simple. We look at what the competition is doing, and we take it and we copy. Can we just look at what, you know, look around the country, see who's providing what and what's working, and just copy? Can we just do that? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Torres, I do allude to you because I do use my MTA app. It's wonderful with its real-time information for paratransit as it allows me to form to make decisions if the vehicle is going to be really late and where it's at and things like that and how I proceed. So I do understand and agree to your, have sympathy to your points. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps in the future, we need the software companies sitting in these meetings instead of the service delivery providers. What do you think?
Like I said, I've been using it for at least 2 years now, and I'm enjoying it. While it's not totally perfect, it's very accurate, and it's a very powerful tool where I don't have to call in and ask about where's my ride at least 90% of the time now, because I have the control in my hands, and I know, you know, certain things about the vehicle at least an hour beforehand. So I'm put at ease is in terms of how to go from there. But
we'll get there.
It's a process. So, Ms. Williams-Halls, we're going to talk about safety. Is there something you're bringing up, or did you want me to ask, like, Mr. Blake some points I want to bring up?
I don't have a lot to share in terms of bringing it up, so feel free to ask your questions.
So the first thing is I've noticed, and this is a good thing, that, you know, when you call into Where's My Ride, and even I've heard on the radio with dispatch and even agents with customers, they're very, you know, prolific and consistent about keeping wearing that mask and wearing it properly. I've noticed that you have drilled it with customers and you have drilled it with dryers. So keep that up. That's one thing I've noticed in terms of safety. The thing I wanted to ask is, as it goes back to the seatbelts, is it possible, and I know, you know, drivers have to do specific things, in between customers, or at least in between shifts, and the other Metro Access committee members has brought it up, is there any way they can clean those seatbelts off, or at least simply wipe down the chairs between customers, either by shift or between customers if they, you know, there's not a customer there? Because I've been on vehicles where, oh, I can smell the fresh disinfectant, and this driver, some drivers do it personally, some don't. I know we could ask them to do so much in their, you know, their contract and the things they have to do with the customers, but those are just pennies for thought.
Absolutely. We certainly can listen to those concerns, and our service delivery providers are here. But one of the things that I recall early on when the pandemic first began was that the cleaning and disinfecting of the vehicles primarily is the responsibility of the maintenance team. So it's at the end of each one of the routes that the vehicles are thoroughly cleaned before they go back into service. Naturally, if there is an incident that occurs on board a vehicle, the vehicle will be taken out of service and cleaned immediately before another customer has an opportunity to board. A lot of the drivers do take on the initiative to clean and wipe the seats themselves, as you mentioned, between customer transport efforts, but because of some of the restrictions with regard to their unions, I'm not 100% certain that they can demand that every driver does it after every customer trip. So I'm free, you know, I'm happy to defer to some of the service delivery providers if they want to add some comment here.
And then the other last piece is the seats that Ms. Bush and myself brought up about. I've noticed in the vehicle, like I said, the front seats, I can understand they're pulling them up, but the vans that have four, you know, physical seats, I've seen sometimes they've already put up three and saying, this is my choice in the back. I do understand, yes, I'm to sit in the back for the seat, but at least give me a choice between one of the two seats in the back.
So and to I be know- really clear, after last month's meeting, we sent out a notification to the team that we didn't have an aversion to them putting the seat up. However, if a customer asks to sit in one of those seats, they're not allowed to refuse access to that customer. So I want to encourage you, if the seat that is put up does not appeal to you and you want to use it, you can ask the driver to get access to that seat.
I mean, it just gives the appearance that when three seats are up, it's like, this is the choice of the seat you're going to have in the back. That's just what my observation is sometimes.
Right. And it is to encourage the customers to go to the back. That's not our policy, but they do sometimes take that initiative to do that. Again, though, they cannot refuse access to that seat.
OK, got it.
Yeah.
But go ahead with anything else that you may have on top of what I just asked you.
I just wanted to share. I mean, you actually have covered it all. Just was going to say that we continue to focus on customers having a safe driving experience, that we're addressing all of our disinfectant procedures, deviations that are uncovered in our QA process. We are really, really hammering the importance of properly disinfecting the vehicles. And we continue to enforce the mask usage by our vehicle operators and by the riding public. So not much to add there.
Any feedback from any committee members or the public as it relates to this topic?
Chair Summerford, we have two hands up. First is Dr. Posner and then Vanessa Coles.
Okay, I'll take Dr. Posner and Vanessa Coles. And after that, I would like to get to the next topic so we can move. Thank you.
This is the old question I had about money. You know, we talked about drivers handling the money, and I wondered whether you've come up with a way that if they're wearing a glove, they can take the cash and then put it into a cash box rather than having to handle it, put it in their wallet, and then send it out and whatever. So the question is there a safer way for the drivers to have to handle cash?
So we've been talking about this over the last year, trying to come up with a remedy, reaching out to other agencies, similar size and scope, and we've just not come up with anything of measure. Now, I would like to tell you that many of the vehicle operators do utilize gloves, where gloves are not a mandate. Many of them do. Many of the service delivery providers provide gloves to their drivers for use. So I believe that as much as we can require, they're already utilizing gloves. But we certainly are willing to push that a little bit further.
Yeah, the taxi cabs in big cities, typically what they do is the driver will take the cash in and they put it in a slot in the floor so that they can say, we have no money, don't hold us up. And so the idea would be that even if they have to handle it once, they don't have to handle it two or three or four times. So if there were a lock box or, you know, something like a suggestion box that I'm sure every business has, in the front seat or, you know, there where he can just slide the money in and then at the end of the day, just bring the box in.
Oh, so we certainly can consider that because I've seen the plexiglass boxes like that you've mentioned where you could even see into it. You could see exactly how much was put into the box. So that is something we are more than willing to take back and discuss to see if it's a solution for us.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Vanessa?
Yes, hi. My comments, I thought was a seatbelt subject, but I'm glad to see that it seems like it's falling under the secure safety.
And I brought I specifically knew you had a concern. That's why I brought up the questions about it previously. It was part of my opening comments on this topic.
Yes. So I just wanted to piggyback on what Mr. And so Torres was saying, as far as readjusting your seatbelt as it tightens up on you, in my experience, I've gotten as close as home and start to unlatch my seatbelt and got a talking to by the driver that we're not to unlatch those seatbelts until the car stops. So to do that in mid-transit, I don't think they would be happy, or they would have to pull over. My understanding, if they hit that click, unclick, that's immediate for them to stop. So just wanted to add that to that comment. And also you did address the cleanliness of the seatbelts. In the summer, I try to use a paper towel or something to keep it from, because I'm more bare-skinned than I am in a coat in the winter. Mm-hmm. So I had asked, was some sleeves or something going to be placed on the, to cover the seatbelt so they are washable or something like that?
Okay, I do recall that comment coming last month's meeting. So I believe that our fleet maintenance manager is looking into that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So after that, we're going to proceed with this Metro Access audio recording question. Then I'm going to ask a new for public comment period, and then we're going to end with the last topic about work plan, flat fare versus fare calculator. Now, given the topic is probably going to be a little bit heated, I will tell you this, what we don't finish tonight, I will extend it into next month as the first topic to be discussed, because I know everyone, given the emails and everything I've seen, this does require, you know, a lengthy amount of discussion. So here, saying that, we're going to go with the Metro Access audio and video recording update. And I know Ms. Rush has a question.
I don't have a question. I just feel that, like I requested, to hear how clear you can hear on the vehicles, especially now since it's only one person going to be riding, the person that's talking. I requested to hear how clear it is. You could be talking about banking, somebody call you on the phone about anything. I want to know how clear it could be heard, and that I just want to hear it. And I requested my own. It doesn't matter. It's not like I'm eavesdropping on someone else. But I think that riding on the bus, they're taping, but there are a lot of people on the buses or on the rail, and you can't distinguish the voice or the card number they might be talking about or the bank account number or whatever. I am still going to request to hear how clear it can be heard on the vehicles. Okay. Thank you.
And I respect the request. And I've heard from Chairman Posner and others, and I would say keep advocating for it. My position, and I'm taking a position right now, and I save mine because while I feel I'm speaking for the authority when I'm speaking to you all, I always could be overruled. We all have a boss, as I always say. But here is the approach I would take. One, you should assume we can hear everything. It's very clear. Let's just take it to that end of the bell curve. Anything you say in the vehicle can be heard, period. And my question, though, with that being the case, and that's for everybody, what I'm still trying to understand from the members of the AAC is, instead of focusing on how clear or not clear, and again, I'm saying you should take the assumption that we can hear everything extremely clearly. Why are we, as a committee, more focused on what can we hear on the recordings as opposed to, as a committee, educating those you all are representing to say that a public transit vehicle, a shared ride public transit vehicle, is not the place or time to be discussing intimate, personal, and other very private details and aspects of one's life. Because whether I hear it super clearly or not, unless it's an emergency, I'm wondering why would anyone want to get into a bus, train, or Metro Access van and discuss very intimate, personal, or otherwise private details of their lives?
You don't know what a person might get a phone call for. It could be the fraud department from Visa saying someone's using your account. Can you tell us your account number? And I sit on there and say it's 1234 blah blah blah. You don't know whether you don't know whether I'm on my way to the airport and I'm going to be gone for a week. So somebody knows that I'm going to be gone for a week. And they heard me on the phone say that, and they could come to my house and rob me. There's too many variables.
All I can say, Ms. Rush, is that
let me hear my own personal conversation. Why can't I hear it, and how clear someone can hear it?
Because that's a matter
You said you have a boss. Well, I got to go to your boss. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Right now, we at 527. I'm going to take public comment before we get to this last topic and see how far we go with this topic of the...
I think we still have another.
Yes. Oh, there's someone else that relates to this topic.
Vanessa had her hand up. She did put it down, though. Vanessa, did you want to make any comments? Or
as it relates to this topic, or I can put you.
Well, I was just gonna kind of piggyback on what Ms. Rush is saying regarding, you know, there are times when I have a 6 o'clock meeting and I get off at 6:04 now, and I'm still in the car and I will log into my meeting. I mean, I'm not saying get rid of it because I guess it's needful. But that's just some things that's happened natural. You are in transit, you know, you're gonna log into another meeting or you're gonna be discussing family issues. And I don't know, it just seems strange that everything that you're saying is being recorded. So, and I know there's probably a very good reason why it's being done, but it just seems very intrusive.
Well, this is a thing, and I hear you, Ms. Coles. This is a safety matter. This is a initiative that began, and I know a lot of people like to say always Blake, but this happened, this started long before Blake came along. It was in response in some measure or in large measure. There were a couple of allegations of sexual assault on our vehicles. There were some other inappropriate conversations that were reported, either way, from the driver to the customer or vice versa. This is a safety matter. You're on a public transit shared ride service. This is not a limousine service. This is not a personal requested transportation service. This is shared ride public transit service. And yes, I'm like you. Have I ever had a meeting where I'm talking on the telephone on the MARC train, for example, because I ride the MARC train to and from work every day. That's a shared ride public transit service. And if some people heard what I've said, and I try to be conscious of that, but sometimes I just have to speak. But yes, that's in the public realm. And again, if your situation is that you absolutely cannot wait, then We get that, and I understand that, but that's not going to stop us from recording video and audio on our vehicles for safety purposes. So again, my whole point is, you should just assume that we can clearly hear everything. I mean, having a recording.
You know, Mr. Blake, I do, and I will say this, the drivers, they are talking about any and everything too. Mm-hmm. And everybody, we both are being recorded. The thing is, what was wrong with the 5 minutes before, 5 minutes after thing where, you know, if you had an incident, then you could at least get that portion of the clip as opposed to the whole day?
No, because in some cases, the clip has to be triggered by an incident. If the driver is committing, for lack of a better, and I hate to say the driver, I mean, because it's now, it makes, you know, if somebody is in the vehicle committing a sexual assault, what is the likelihood they're going to turn the camera on themselves to record their criminal activity? This is a safety matter. It's a safety situation. And again, advocate, go to my boss, go to whomever. I'm going to advocate on the side of safety. If I'm overruled, that's fine. I mean, I've been overruled in my life, but this is a matter that, again, began long before I got involved in the operational aspects of Metro Access. It was actually somewhat delayed. We're actually a year or so delayed in terms of delivering this product. But again, I'm siding on the side of safety based on the feedback of many of the members of the committee when you first heard about those sexual assaults, because they seemed like they came like bang, bang, bang. And this committee—
Well, I wonder then—
Hold on, Ms. Coles. Hold on for 1 second, Ms. Coles.
Okay.
They came one right after the other. It became a very high profile situation. And rightfully so, members of this committee demanded that Metro Access do something. Well, this was the solution that came about. It was vetted with this committee. And now to worry about how loud or how not loud or how clear the recordings are, that's a fair— I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, it's fair and you can bring it up. But again, we're doing this for the sake of safety of our customers and the drivers. And if I'm overruled based on safety comes secondary to private, personal, intimate conversations, we'll see.
All right. Thank you so much.
I think Ms. Coles wanted to finish.
Yeah, go ahead, Ms. Coles. It's 5:32. I need to get public comment in.
Chair Summerford, I apologize. Before we move on, Ms. Williams-Hall wanted to add something.
Just very quickly, I just want to share that, yes, all of the conversations are recorded, but they are not monitored. We only listen to conversations that are tied to specific reported incidents. So if no report is ever made about an incident, we have no business reason to listen to those recordings. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that. They are recorded, they're not all monitored.
Well, I'm not asking, this is Denise Rush, I'm not asking to stop it or start it or not. All I want to do is hear. I can't see. Can I hear?
We've heard the request. Let's let Ms. Vanessa close up, please. Okay. I see Doris has a comment as well.
So I just wanted to maybe make another suggestion. With all the new type of monitors, the Ring, Alexa has another system, whereas it's audible. And if you're concerned with someone being able to activate or say something, if something situation is happening, then maybe something like that, a more audible thing, can be used as opposed to just straight recording, you know, to activate something like that. Because Alexa or Amazon is doing a lot of, they're connecting a lot of their speech things to appliances and things of that nature.
And I appreciate the recommendation, Ms. Coles. I could just tell you, we've already made the investment. We're moving forward. This is a safety matter. And you're riding on a shared ride, public transportation service. We can hear it very, very clearly. I'll just continue to just state that. I'm not gonna suggest, we only can hear if you, or we can't hear if you whisper. Anything you share, your bank account number, intimate details of what you and your significant other did, all kind of information, if you're sharing it in public on a Metro Access vehicle, assume we can hear it very, very clearly. So my encouragement and my encouragement of the AAC, you don't have to do what I say, obviously, My encouragement will be for you to encourage those of you, those you represent, to not, unless it's absolutely, absolutely essential, to not discuss personal, intimate, or otherwise private details while riding a Metro Access vehicle.
Thank you.
We're going to stick with our equipment that we've purchased. We're quite satisfied with the equipment. We believe it's going to help protect the customers as well as the drivers and make our service an even more safer transportation option, as you all are entitled to.
All right, thank you. With that, we're going to close this subject and move on to public comment. Is there any public comments?
Yes. Anu? Yes, we do. Ansel Torres. And Doris Ray had her hand up. So if Doris, you would like to make some your comments during public comments, you can.
All right. And then after that, if there's time, we're going to tackle the last subject on the flat fare versus fare calculate. And if not, it will be the first topic to be discussed at the next month's meeting. Go ahead, Ansel Torres, and then Doris.
Yes. Okay, there's so much I have to say, but
let's try to get through. Just summit and keep it brief.
I will do my endeavor best, sir. Let me get started. Let me just say, Denise and Vanessa, you have my full-throated endorsement of what you're trying to do. I have similar concerns. I think video can capture a lot in terms of physical assault, sexual assault. There's a lot that the video can capture. The audio isn't absolutely necessary to capture evidence of impropriety. And I'm also interested to see how much can they hear on the trains or the buses, because I am sure the speech and comments that everybody on a bus is making or on a train is not being picked up. We have fixed route equivalent. We want it in all things, if that's what's going on, if that's what you're saying, that they do this on the bus and they do this on the train. But many times I am observing that equal at WMATA doesn't mean equal at WMATA. Equal at WMATA means equal when it's in WMATA's favor and its best interests. But when equal has to do with the rider, equality is not important. Case in point, Exhibit A, the WMATA website. I have submitted my comments on that. And you look at example after example after example of what I've put up there, and there's no equality there. But there is a whole lot of talk about fixed route equivalency and oh yeah, the bus is doing it at the rails for this recording thing. But that's only touted when it's in WMATA's favor, and that is wrong. That is absolutely wrong. On the fare calculator versus flat fare, I think the time is right, because I have had extensive conversations with Mr. Blake via email, and I am convinced now that the fare calculator is very much broken, because I have been asking Mr. Blake questions that he does not seem to be able to answer. I have asked him over and over, and in my reading of my emails and his emails, what I'm hearing is that there's no answer to what I'm asking. Unless there's information that I don't have at my disposal, and he has, maybe there are things that he knows that I don't know, but if he does know them, I wish he would tell me, because then I would back down. But right now, as I see it, the fare calculator is broken, because essentially what I'm hearing from Mr. Blake is that the fare calculator can find discounts. But those discounts that are being discovered cannot be replicated with the regular, you know, if you just call WMATA and you say, you know, find me this strip that this fare calculator is finding, they can't find it. So if you can't get a WMATA agent to find the same ride that the fare calculator is supposedly finding, then it's not validated. And if it can't be validated, in my judgment, it is made up. It is not real. And so hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about this extensively. I'm very concerned about it. And I think the time is right for us to deal with it. There's much more I have to say on other things, but I'll have to stop here. Thank you.
Thank you. Doris?
Well, before Doris goes, because, you know, I just got to say, we're going to talk about the fare calculator, as you said, next month. So I'll save most of the details for that. But for the record, I just have to say, I think I answered every one of Mr. Torres's question. The point is, for the record, just because you don't like my answer doesn't mean I didn't answer your question. But we'll share the same answers I gave Mr. Torres via email with the whole committee next month when we discuss the fare calculator. I just wanted to put on the record that I definitely believe I've answered all the questions. So I don't want the record to reflect that Blake could not answer the questions. Blake did, in fact, answer the questions. Didn't provide the answer that the customer wanted, and that's fair. But we need that on the record. Thank you.
And anew for next month, because right now, even if we had touched upon it, it will still need to go on the next month. I would at least like to have on the agenda a 30-minute discussion about this topic, because it's going to be obviously extensive. Just sure. Now. Doris?
Hi. I'm just actually making this comment related to the last issue that was on the agenda that you were discussing. And I want to say that I ride bus and rail. I have all my life. And I've also ridden Metro Access with friends or colleagues and associates. So what I would say is these are my personal comments, I personally would never make a call or even accept a call and verbally speak my any of my personal information, particularly things like bank accounts, on a train, even though, or a bus, even though I know that a recording is going on and possibly they really couldn't hear you, because people around you can hear you. And I just think it's dangerous. Even riding in a taxi cab with a driver in the front seat and me in the back and nobody else, I would never do that kind of thing. It is dangerous for personal reasons. I understand the comments, especially made by Ms. Rush, and I'm not making any judgment or recommendation regarding this, although soon I am likely to be a Metro Access regular user. But I think we need to take into account and perhaps be educating people, as Mr. Blake has said, because whether you're on bus or rail or Metro Access, I believe it's just a very dangerous practice to put things like your bank account out there. In text, maybe, but I wouldn't do it verbally. Whether there was taping going on and you could hear something on the tape or not, because I have ridden with consumers with certain disabilities who are talking on the phone and revealing a whole damn bunch of personal financial information and other things that shouldn't be discussed, I think, in a Metro Access vehicle is a public place. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Semaphore, yes. We have Rico. You would like to make some comments? And after that, Ms. Rush, I see her hand is up.
So we're going to do it that way until we end at 6. And I do promise that the first, at least minimum 30, minutes of next month's meeting will be discussion of the topic we didn't get to, the flat fare versus fare calculator. And by that time, Anu would have distributed the comments that Mr. Torres has had in an email discussion with Mr. Blake. So the committee has access to those as reference as part of the discussion. So go ahead.
Okay, so I wanted to comment. So I wanted to comment about a recent business that I had, or a recent visit that I had about Las Vegas. This is Mary Beth, the interpreter. I want to make sure I'm clear.
Okay. Thank you all very much. I'm having technical difficulties in teaming and in my screen has gone blank. What Rico is talking about right now is that I recently visited Las Vegas and witnessed a woman who was deaf, who had her hands handcuffed behind her back illegally. And Carrie, if you want to jump in, you're welcome to. My screen has gone completely blank and I can't see anything of Rico.
This is Rico's comments. He is talking about there was a woman in Las Vegas that he knows or visited, and she was handcuffed behind her back by police, and her 11-year-old daughters were made to interpret for her. And he's asking, what is the police policy regarding that? Rico's saying, yep, the woman herself is deaf.
Any staff member wants to take on that question?
Thank you very much, Carrie. This is Mary Beth, the interpreter speaking. Thank you.
Chair Summerford, this is Anu. Rico did contact me with that question. I have shared that question with the Metro Transit Police Department, even though the incident happened in Las Vegas. And as the information is available regarding Metro Transit Police update or what they have to say, we will share it with you.
And just so I can just be clear of what the request of the question is, is Rico asking what is Metro Transit Police Department's policy in terms of handcuffing a person who happens to be deaf or hard of hearing, or is there more to the story than that? What part am I not clear on that was clearer in the question?
Mr. Blake, this is Anu. That was the request that Rico submitted, yes.
Okay, I see Rico's talking now, so let's see what he's saying as well.
And Anu, who was the other person after Rico?
Hold on, Paul. Rico's speaking right now.
Oh, sorry.
Rico's saying, yes, it's never the right thing to handcuff a deaf person behind their back. You have to handcuff them in front because it's not, you know, you know, you cannot handcuff deaf people behind themselves because they cannot communicate then that way. That's what is important, and that's equitable communication.
Mr. Blake, give me just 1 second. I'm so sorry. This is Mary Beth, but I want to clarify with Rico. You are asking what the hour. He's frozen. I asked if he was clarifying about the DC Metro policy, and he said yes. That is what he's asking about. He is asking about the DC Metro area policy related to handcuffing deaf or hard of hearing people behind their back.
That's interesting. And that's what Carrie was just saying as well. Yeah. So I'm going to wait and hear what Anu hears back from the police department. I think that's very interesting. That's certainly eye-opening because yes, a person who's deaf used their hand a lot more to communicate. It's a good question. I mean, and I don't have the answer, obviously, but I thank you for raising that question. And let's see what the police department has to say. And I don't even want to speculate what the answer may be. So we appreciate the question.
Thank you. Anu, who's next?
Ms. Rush.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Thank you very much. This is Rico speaking.
Thank you, Rico.
Thank you very much. And thank you to Carrie for the assist.
My comment, this is Denise Rush. My comment is about the fare calculator. From the beginning, I was on the committee when it started, the fare calculator, and the fare calculator has not ever been understood by the committee or the public. Every time you call, you get a different number. You get no logic. You don't understand. You just don't feel clear. And if this has been, I don't know how many years. Phil, how long has it been? Or Paul?
Since 2013.
Yeah, well, since 2013, we haven't been able to understand how to calculate properly our fare. Because when you put it in, you get so many variables and combinations. That's why we're really advocating a flat rate. But from 2013, I can't tell you. I just know my fares are always $6.50. But those people who have to calculate in the middle, good luck.
So Mr. Blake is part of next month's discussion, perhaps, hopefully hearing what the committee members and public has said about it. If you can maybe have some staff member somehow break it really down to.
It will be yours truly. At least I'll start it off. Let's put it that way. But I will say this. As you all know, again, I didn't get involved in Metro Access operations, not necessarily by choice, but I didn't get involved in Metro Access operations until February of 2018. So you guys have 5 years to work on this with the previous leadership. And I understand, believe me, I understand the point you're making. And I will be providing the same answers I gave Mr. Torres to the committee. And let's see if it's clear and if it's not. But in addition to that, I want us to keep our eye on the prize. And that is what Chairman Posner brought to the board of directors, what Ms. Rush just said she's in favor of, and I think most of you all are in favor of, and that is a flat fare. And I don't want us to get so bogged down into the fare calculator that we lose sight of the eye on the prize. I would also just say, let's not focus on, and this is really a response and a positive, you know, response to Chair Posner's statement to the board last month. I wouldn't focus so much at this moment on what that flat fare number should be. We'll get to that. I think you want to just continue to get buy-in. If you as a committee, I mean, I know Dr. Posner said it and Ms. Rush just stated it and others. If this committee believes in a flat fare as being a simpler, easier model to for all customers, I will keep pushing that. But next month, yes, I will give you a nice, well-detailed response to what the fare calculator is doing and how the fares are being calculated.
Mr. Blake, I have one request for you that will be really useful. And feel free to pass it on later when it gets discussed at the board. But I think it's important to know what the cost of the fare calculator is. The actual cost of the fare calculator and the amount of time that is either saved or spent by the reservationist in using it to develop a fare and to answer questions about the fare. Because you know from my presentation to the board, the bottom line is money usually wins the day. And we need them to know how much the cost of the fare calculator being replaced by a flat fare would benefit the agency, as well as fare box recovery from whatever flat fare they select versus what's currently gotten with the fare calculator. So, you know, not for us, but when we present it to the board, I'm sure numbers, and that would be a valuable set of numbers for them to have.
That's a fair request. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. If this is 5:56, I can take one more comment and then we must adjourn because our interpreters are gone bye-bye at 6 o'clock.
Chair Samford, this is, I know I do not see anyone's hand up at this point. I can take advantage of this time and just say that anybody who would like to submit their public comments can do so in writing by sending us an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call us and leave a message at 202-962-1100.
Thank you. And with
can
that,
I take one last comment, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Real quick, if you see, for let me just describe my image tonight is not a picture of me because I didn't bring any work attire with me. I'm down here in Miami with my mom. And so the image I have is a picture of Mount Sinai Hospital where I was born. But the reason why it's placed here tonight is because Dr. Posner, MD, medical Dr. Posner, we're still trying to figure out, but we believe he was working in that hospital the day I was born. What a small world.
Well, I'll also tell you that I probably trained the nurse that helped deliver you in the delivery suite because
oh, my goodness.
There we go. Nurses, including those at Sinai.
I hear you.
And worked with the cardiologist at Mount Sinai. So, yeah. So
does Rush blame Dr. Posner for my being here?
So I take some responsibility for you.
Yes.
All right. And with that, can I get a motion for adjournment?
Chair Summerford, I see a hand up.
Oh, there's one more hand? Oh, okay. We got 2 minutes.
Answer to us.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Paul, just quickly, I thought I heard you say that the exchange that I had with Mr. Blake,
I made a request that it went to all the committee members to be shared as part of next month, as I presume it's part of this whole conversation about the fare calculator. Is okay. That right. Okay with you? I didn't ask
yes,
that.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
yes,
I'm sorry if I didn't ask you. That was the first
no,
piece.
No. I'm glad that it's being done.
All right, well, to have as a basis.
We all learn from this.
Yeah. And I'll be part of the next month's conversation about this agenda item we haven't gotten to, which I will dedicate a minimum 30 minutes of discussion next month.
Okay.
Can I get a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. We are adjourned.
Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
Bye, everybody. Have a good one.
Oh.